Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Anthony Crawford and Savannah Lee make up the duo of Sugarcane Jane, heralding from Locksley, Alabama, referred to by the Washington Times as one of the best duos since Johnny and June. Anthony spent a large portion of his career with Neil Young and then Steve Winwood and Dwight Yoakam, just to name a few. As Sugarcane Jane, he and Savannah have produced 11 studio albums, with their latest entitled On a Mission. The two join us on this edition of Americana Music Profiles for an inspirational chat about life, their music, their career, and their latest record. All right, we are with Anthony and Savannah of Sugarcane Jane. Welcome, guys. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, Greg. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to chat with us today. It's we were talking offline. We've been able to talk like this a couple times, so it's good to reconnect with you guys. You guys got some new stuff going on in your music career. For those folks that are listening that maybe didn't get a chance to tune in, I think it was maybe 2020 the last time we talked, and a lot has happened in the world since then for sure. But let's maybe just do a quick recap of who you guys are and how you got together. I know, Anthony, you've done a bunch of stuff. When did you start playing music?
Oh, the very first time there is a story behind that. I know that my conscious mind made a decision probably when I was 7 years old.
Wow.
My sister had a date with a guy. It came over to pick her up, and I answered the door, and he had this little Mickey Mouse plastic guitar in his hand, and I was thinking, well, what's this all about? And he handed it to me, and it happened to be tuned in a way that it just vibrated my soul. I was like, you know, like a kid eating sugar for the first time.
Wow.
In the face, probably was a whoo, and it struck deep into me, and it's almost like I was retired from age 7 because I never have had to work. I've loved music and just all things about it.
That's awesome.
Since I was that young, it was a journey that I started early on.
And when did it click for you that vision at 7 as a young man actually was going to make sense, and you were going to be able to stay retired your whole life and do what you love to do?
Well, there's a story about that. You know, the first time that you realize, wait a minute, I went and worked for my brother. He was working in downtown Birmingham, Alabama, and at a scrap metal yard. He was married to the owner's daughter, so he got me a job. I was at the time maybe 16, 17, somewhere in my mid to late teens. I think I was out of high school, maybe 18 or whatever, but nonetheless, I had been playing music out and making, you know, the money back then. If you made $100 in one night, you were like, wow,
yeah,
that's great money.
Yeah.
You know, because ultimately I realized that when he gave me the job, I lasted about 2 weeks at the most, because I would have to be there at 5:30 in the morning or 6 and work till 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Just,
what
you know,
you do in there? You're like,
I was sorting beer cans that people brought in. That was like on a conveyor belt.
Oh, wow.
Just I mean, it was just like nastiness. And so I realized, wait a minute, even though I'm bad at math generally, I figured that if I just went out and played music, I would make way more because I was only making maybe $200 a week,
uh-huh.
you know, and I could go out and play music and do that easily and have a beer and have fun and play my guitar. So
right.
I just knew probably at 16 years old, 17, I was very clear that this was my path. But then I guess the next question to me, I'll put this out there. There's another phase to that as well, is you're out there and after you've made all those prior decisions, you find yourself to be 45, 50, whatever. You got no security except your memories and the future, you know, and that's what music is to me, is it's one of those things that like surfing, there's nothing to hold on to. You're just out there and you're riding a wave, and music is a wave and you're riding it. And if you fall, you know, that's it, you know? Right. So, you know, I didn't ever go the path. I've got a lot of friends who are retiring now, and I look at them and they all work a job and all that. So they're all set, but they look at me and they come see me play and it's, you know, they love what I'm doing. So it all worked out.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've heard it said before, if you do what you love, you'll never have to work a day in your life.
Correct.
And so I hear in your voice, and I know you guys love what you do. So, you do it until you can't do it anymore. Right. The word retire doesn't really fit anymore.
No.
You hope you don't have to retire.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
That's language for another lifestyle. That doesn't really compute to the musician, the lifer musician, the true people that give their life to it.
Yeah, yeah. So in between that 17-year-old self and the 50-year-old revelation that you had there was a lot of working with a lot of well-known artists, you know, Dwight Yoakam, Stevie Winwood, and Neil Young. I think didn't you spend some time with him on stage in his band?
With Neil? Well, all of them, yes. I spent most of my time, believe it or not, with Neil off and on for, gosh, I started with him somewhere in 1982, maybe somewhere in the late 1982. And then from that point on, it seemed like we worked all the time, went everywhere. I was a part of the International Harvesters. First, I was a part of a band he had called Neil and the Shocking Pinks. So I go that far back, and I even have credit on the Trans album, and I go pretty good ways back. I mean, he was only 10 years removed from doing Harvest, you know, so he was still a young guy. I think he was like maybe 36 years old or 37. I was in my early 20s, 24.
And then the Heart of Gold movie that you did.
Yeah, I did some Heart of Gold movie with him at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville. Just lots of good things. Great memories of working with Neil. It was a ride to the very top of the heap, you know. Mm-hmm. He's loved by everybody, and they're all kind of fans that are such Neil Young fans that when we would go do shows, he would have Wilco and Death Cab for Cutie. I mean, I don't care who it was. They don't care for anybody but Neil. He's got
interesting
this fan base. You know what I'm saying? They'll put up with an opener, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
I mean, Wilco, they're there to see Neil. And so, you know, being in Neil Young's band, I always thought that that might be something that would catapult me into that crowd, but not so. I found it to be the opposite effect. But from working with Neil, I also met some people that knew Steve Winwood, and I went out on the Roll With It tour. It was the end of his Back in the High Life and then starting Roll With It or whatever. And that was like a number one record in the world. And,
yeah.
And it was exciting, you know? And then also we went and I later wound up with Dwight Yoakam. I was working with Steve Forbert, and we went out to Los Angeles to work with Pete Anderson, who was producing Steve. And Pete's a basketball fanatic. So he had a basketball in a goal out by the studio. So I would shoot hoops with him, and somehow that resonated with him enough to want to do a record on me.
Hmm.
And so he started Little Dog Records to put my record out.
Hmm.
So I've had a great journey with just odd little stories.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So when did the two of you, Savannah, when did you guys, how did you guys find each other, and where in that journey did you guys connect?
Well, I was up in Nashville, you know, just doing some studio work and playing the little writers' nights places. And I had a analog recording studio I was also managing called Deep Field Studio.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in Westmead. And Anthony he would come over and record there. So that's how we actually met. And then we're friends for probably, about 6 or 7 years before we actually got to do any kind of music together. And I was kind of getting out of town, and he offered to do a record on me because I had been up in Nashville for 7 years and never really did anything musically for myself. So he did that. And when we sang together, you know, we just kind of, we fell for each other for the music.
Yeah.
And then it was just, I don't know, it just all seemed perfect, really. So here we are 3 kids later, and it worked out.
Like they say, your vibe attracts your tribe.
Yeah.
And I just have to say that with Savannah, I have, I've never felt more at ease with being around somebody 24/7 because I've tried it before, and it doesn't always come easy to find somebody that you can just be around that much. But we're pretty much every day, all day, everywhere, you know, so we're together all the time, and it feels so natural. So yeah, we just
got lucky, but we've both been unlucky in love before. So
sometimes it takes that, unfortunately, to realize what you're missing, and make you go look for what really makes your heart sing.
That's right. To add a little bit to that, I know that there is no reason for any regret in your life. And as well, you know, sometimes the things you really want the most aren't on the path that you're intended to be on.
Yeah.
So if a person could learn that young, I'm 66 years old and just now figured that out, you know, it's like, wow, I wish I'd have known that.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But, you know, if the universe doesn't want me to be doing something right now, so be it, because that released me from the feeling of, my God, I've got to be the male version of Taylor Swift or I'll feel inadequate.
I mean,
I always thought of myself as the white Michael Jackson. You know, I wanted to do something fantastic. I thought God had put a finger on me. You know, it was a sickness, really, to be thinking and following something so bizarre as to actually think that the world owed me a career of that kind of thing or whatever.
Right.
So I think that certain environments promote that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nashville for me was one of those because it has so much happening there, and it's not just country music. There's a lot of other people that come to town, and and so I don't know. I moved away, and with Savannah, we found success, and we did not measure it by dollars.
Right.
We measured it by our happiness, and it's just amazing to finally get to enjoy the rest of my life knowing that little secret. And that's the one thing I would pass on to any musician that's making it their life. just know that, you know, there's no security necessarily, and there's also no big payout. Nobody's just going to call you up and go, hey, Rosemary, wake up. You're successful. Yeah. I swear, that's what I always thought. I was going to wake up and, like, the tooth fairy came and left me success under my pillow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you guys have had some good success. You know, I think this is your 11th studio album that you're about to release on Friday, On a Mission. And I read where the Washington Times called you one of the best duos since Johnny and June. I would say that was a pretty good measure or a pretty good accolade to take with you.
Well, you know, we use that all the time. That is something that will stay with us. It's a great compliment.
Yeah.
And I think that when people see us play, certainly there are other people out there that have a blend and they have this and they have that or whatever, but there's something about I think that people see some sort of connection soul-wise when we're playing together, and it makes them feel good, and I think they might recognize it on a recording.
Yeah,
you know, just the vibrations that we make through our voices, and so that's a great compliment. So we actually really take that and just
we have
believe it.
The whole, I guess, stage banter, if you will. You know, we
sure.
just kind of we just take who we are on stage. We just try to be that.
It's a bit of a Sonny and Cher type thing. We
yeah.
have a lot of humor and stuff. So.
So tell me about the new record, On a Mission, set to release on Friday, March 1st. All new material, is that right?
Well, I'll tell you what, off this, you know, prior to this recording, the interview, we had talked about people putting out music on cassettes.
Right, we did.
Like that.
Yep.
Well, I recorded a lot of music on cassettes and tape and all that from the last 45 years of just being a musician. So I went back through my whole catalog, and after peeling through some really bad songs, I would find occasionally something where I was just spot on for what's happening right now. So it's a lot of it is a collection of my past.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did was I put the demo in and used my demo as a click track and tried to make it as much like that as I could.
Mm.
And then just take the original demo out, and I would have like a modern day recording of what I did 40 years ago.
Cool.
So yeah, it's kind of like that. But
Anthony's got bags of dats just laying around the house or in the attic, or I don't know.
These dat
spread out everywhere, but you know, he was going through a bag, and I thought I knew all of Anthony's songs. He's got probably over 400 songs, but I do know a lot of them, but I didn't ever have access to the DAT tapes.
Mm.
So he just, you know, discovered this one DAT tape in particular. It had Try to Make It Look Like Me, Burn, and On a Mission on that particular tape, and
mm-hmm.
I had never heard those songs before, and just immediately fell in love with them, and I was really excited about it.
I was at a good place musically back then. Sometimes you, like, your hair can get in a weird spot, you know, your music can get in a weird spot.
Yeah,
just being influenced by things, and but at this particular time I I was just right in a good spot.
Yeah.
And so,
well, it's interesting that you said that they're kind of from different eras of your past. Listening through the tracks, I could hear, and I can't tell you which one made me think these things, but I would hear like elements of the Beatles and the band America and Santana and Pure Prairie League, all of those kinds of things. And I know that you've had exposure with different elements of those artists in the past, but it makes sense to me now that I would hear those things, because these songs weren't necessarily written last month to be on a new album. So
that's right.
It was neat to hear that 70s and 80s vibe sneaking through just about every one of those songs.
That's a good way to look at it. I appreciate that. I take it as a big compliment, because ultimately, it boils down to, like, on Burn, the single that we have, there's a big note that I hit on the bass string of my electric guitar that just goes, you know, and it's just ringing out there, and it's totally like a Neil Young sound, being that I worked with Neil, but I loved Neil Young's music before I ever got a call from his manager to work with him. So it was just in my blood. Most people my age grew up loving James Taylor or whoever. I never fell for it. I just never went down that singer-songwriter route. Right. I always loved rhythm and drums and bass. And just, I'm a producer. I play all those instruments. And so I added little things subconsciously to these songs that just, and plus at this stage of my life, I have some great equipment. You know, I've got a 1955 Fender Concert and a 19, you know, early Tweed Champ amp and all these great amps. And so I used them with these old, beautiful microphones, Electric Voice, ribbon mics, and Telefunken and whatever. So I never had access to that when I was recording these songs originally. So they're done on a cassette tape or a four track, you know. And so
maybe we'll put out some.
I'm thinking I might put them out now that you've enlightened me that they're coming back.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'd love to see you do that. So how will you guys support this for your fans? What kind of tour are you looking at? Do you have something lined up for the spring and summer coming up to share this?
We do. Tell them.
Well, we're headed out to California. We're playing the Strawberry Music Festival in Grass Valley on May 24th. So we'll be out that way. Anthony and I want to go to the Grand Canyon together.
Cool.
So we're just kind of making memories while we do it. You know, it's just the trip out west is just, we've done it once before. We played Strawberry back in 2019 and we just loved it so much, but we really want to spend some time in California. So maybe play along the coast. We'll see what happens.
Cool. Yeah. Fun. So
yeah, we're going to be spontaneous.
There you go. I like that. So how can people get a copy of the new record? Listen, are you doing some videos? How can people enjoy this new music?
Yeah, we're working on a new video now for the single Burn. And so that'll be out soon. And then you can just go, the best way is always, of course, the artist website at sugarcanejane.com.
Mm-hmm.
But it's out, you know, it's out for streaming everywhere, but we've got colored vinyl coming out hopefully before the record store day. So I'm hoping for April 19th. So.
Yeah. Awesome.
And we'll probably be making up some cassette tapes next.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Cassettes and all of that.
Yeah, cool. Well, thank you guys. It's been fun catching up and kind of reconnecting with your story and I really love the new album, and it's that sound that you guys have captured is starting to come back too, and I love that feel, that kind of that summertime 70s California you know, that vibe that just kind of felt innocence almost, you know, before any of the crazy stuff started to happen. I wish you well with it, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Absolutely. I hope we get to do this again someday.
I would love to. Yeah, I'd love to get together and continue this conversation.
Well, we'll be here, and best of luck to you.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.